Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Good News Updates from Living Compassion. My name is Jen. I'm a monk at the Zen Monastery Peace Center, and I get to be your host this afternoon for the update. I've got two great guests with me here today. The first one is Bob from San Francisco. Welcome, Bob.
Welcome, Jen. Thanks.
So Bob is all things IT to the organization. So any email you read, the whole website, blogs that we do, any online transaction, donations, signing up for retreat, troubleshooting, all of that, that's all of Bob's world. I'm sure I left 100 things out, Bob, yeah?
No, it's pretty good.
pretty comprehensive. Mm-hmm. So at any rate, Bob is integral to everything we do. My second guest is Alex. Alex is a monk at the Zen Monastery Peace Center, and I could probably use the rest of the update to talk about the various functions that Alex serves. He's most famous currently for his channeling of Awareness Junkie Man and for being the creator of the Voices cartoons. Welcome, Alex.
Hey, Jen. Thank you.
So for the purposes of this update, what we're most interested in from Alex's perspective is his ability to make technology projects work and his role as the operations manager of Keep It Simple, which is what brings us to the update for today. We're here to talk about Keep It Simple and a giant momentous occasion we had with Keep It Simple yesterday. So before we tell you what that was, Alex, would you give us kind of the 30-second version of what is Keep It Simple?
Well, Keep It Simple is very simply our mail order system that we use online primarily at this point.
Uh-huh.
And we sell meditation products and books by Sherry, as well as CDs, DVDs, and a whole line of other products that represent practice.
Yeah, so it's really how we offer kind of the tools, the physical manifestation tools, the books, the meditation cushions, all the things you might need to help you with your practice, we offer those for sale through Keep It Simple.
Exactly. We are a 503 nonprofit. Anything that comes from Keep It Simple goes straight toward the monastery to keep it functioning.
Yeah, exactly. So it's a really good concrete way for the monks to offer those products, and it's a way for us to help support the monastery because the revenue all goes to make the workings of the monastery happen.
Yep.
So, Alex, before yesterday, could you tell us what a heroic person in the Sangha needed to surmount in order to order with us off of Keep It Simple Online?
Yes. Well, just to give a little background, before we had what we have currently, we mainly got our orders via people sending in through the mail a little order form. I don't know if they still make those things these days anymore, but it's an order form where you write out what you want. You enter your credit card
information. You mean on a paper with a pen?
Yes, with a paper and a pen.
Wow.
It's amazing, yes. And that's what folks had to do. And so when computers started to take over and we noticed the need for something more sophisticated, we came up with a version of that for the web. And so it was essentially a digitized version of our sales, of our order form.
Yeah.
And so people still had to type in their name and credit card information, but it was just like an extension of that piece of paper.
Yeah, so they had to kind of go and find the item on the site, kind of search through and then see what it is and put the right item number down and
figure out the sales tax
at the ship. What is the shipping? How does that go? And it was truly kind of a heroic thing to be willing.
Oh, very heroic.
Do it. Yeah. So, what happened yesterday is that our shopping cart went live. We got current, and we now have a way that people can, I guess essentially it's what people are used to in, the average online site that they're on these days, so that they're going to be able to shop at Keep It Simple in the same way that they would with any other online database. And so I wish there was some way for the three of us to, that can seem kind of humdrum, a little mundane, but what went into offering that possibility for that breakthrough to actually happen, for it to go live yesterday, was gigantic. So I thought we might turn to you, Bob, and have you tell us a little bit about that process, kind of the highlights of what we did to make that happen.
Sure. Well, it was almost like a three-step process. which is that when we sort of had our basic website a couple of years ago, and we made our own little heroic attempt to add a shopping cart to it at that time, and that was unsuccessful. And then in the past year, we actually moved our website over to a whole new system that allowed us to just kind of essentially staple a shopping cart onto our website, which was not possible before. But the interesting thing I was thinking about this earlier today, knowing I was going to be on here, is that I think that the same process that we used to actually get this one working was the same process that we went through to where we got to the unsuccessful shopping cart.
Can you say more about that?
Yeah. So, I mean, there's a certain way that we work internally as organizations.
Yeah.
Essentially, it's modeled after our practice.
Yeah.
You know, the whole how you do anything is how you do everything.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we usually start out that process with just a whole lot of communication,
mm-hmm.
making sure that each of us is sort of clear on, you know, what's being proposed.
Yeah.
What do we think the possibilities are? What's it going to take? What are resources going to be? Is everyone really clear on what it might look like in the end?
Mm-hmm.
And then as we launch into it, you know, at every step, you know, so I really am sort of like the one who kind of technically put it together,
mm-hmm.
but, you know, I wasn't out there just acting on my own.
Right, right. Yeah, every step of the way, it's a team effort. I mean, I really think it's worth taking a minute to look at that, the failed attempt. You know, it reminds me of the Thomas Edison story of his foreman coming to him and when they're trying to create the filament for the light bulb and saying, you know, this is a big waste of time. This is not working. We should give up. And Edison saying, you know, nonsense. We know 1,000 ways in which it doesn't work. And boy, does it feel to me like that's the attitude of mine that was brought to this process of the shopping cart. Because that, you know, you went by it very quickly, but that, quote, failed attempt at doing the shopping cart, so much went into that, and it did end up not working. But what, to me, I ended up feeling in the end, like, it was this huge triumph because, we communicated about it, we talked about it, we all looked at it, we all knew we were putting an investment of time into it, it felt really worth it, and so in the end, when it didn't work, that was fine. You know, we knew one more way in which we weren't going to do it.
Right, and for me, when we made this second attempt, it ended up serving as basically training for myself, certainly,
yes.
in how to go about it this time.
Exactly. So we knew what we were watching for. We knew where the pitfalls could be. We knew where, yeah. Yeah, I just love it. What, as I was looking at it this afternoon, also knowing we were going to be talking about this, was it felt like as we were creating the shopping cart, first of all, we knew there was a need. We knew that the possibility was out there. Sure, you know, we had a system there. You know, we were talking about it with Alex. We had a way to take orders that keep it simple, but it wasn't everything that's possible. What we're looking at in practice is we always want everything that people are interacting with that has to do with us to be, to the best of our ability, to be an experience of practice. And so we knew there's a smoother, easier way to go about offering our products online. So we set about doing that, but with no urgency to it, no pushing something to make it happen that wasn't really ready to happen, no, oh gosh, we got to get this done. But at the same time, there was also no giving up.
Right,
yeah.
Right. And the other thing that for me was particularly fun about this is that a lot of Sangha were involved in helping make this happen.
Oh, yeah, that's great.
So, you know, we enlisted a group of people who have volunteered in the past to take on, you know, what we call working meditation, but instead of doing it at the monastery, they did it from their homes, and that, you know, to be able to call on a group of people like that who are, you know, already deeply invested in the practice, and to have them, you know, help out with something like this is just amazing.
Yeah, really, that's a really great point. So truly, it's a team effort, but even way bigger than just the folks who are doing the day-to-day business of the organization. It takes the much larger Sangha to make anything like this happen.
Yeah, that's for sure.
Yeah.
And at the end of it, we have a shopping cart finally, and we're hoping it's light years ahead easier to go through the process of getting any product ordered from us.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, what really puts a smile on my face is to realize that our big goal was we wanted to offer this to people in time for this holiday season, and we did it. You know,
yep.
we really did it. We put our minds to it. We took the steps that needed to be taken. You know, you guys, I can't even say the countless number of hours, truly starting with you, Bob, and then, you know, to Alex, and then, as you say, to all the volunteers, how much time and care and attention has gone into every little piece, making sure that it's just so. And now we get to offer this to folks as a much more pleasant, we hope, as you say, and clear way to order with us during the holidays.
Right, right. And we're, you know, because it's, you know, about 24 hours old, you know, as people are using it, it would be really helpful to us if they do see anything, you know, kind of weirdness or oddities or anything that seems a little bit off, just let us know. It would be really helpful.
Yeah, that's, thank you for saying that. So people are welcome to, what would be the best way to give us feedback, Bob?
Probably to send an email to support@livingcompassion.org.
Okay, great. And yeah, way really open to feedback. So, yep, we're excited that it's up there. We feel triumphant, but really also want to know how it's working and what's not working about it, because that'll help us fine tune it. And now's the time to do that. Now's the time to take those steps.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thank you, Bob.
Thank you, Jen.
Alex, anything else before we sign off?
No, that's fabulous. I'm very excited. The shopping cart not only makes it a very pleasant experience for the shopper, but it really puts Keep It Simple's work here at the monastery light years ahead, too, so that we can focus our energies on many more things, because there's lots of things we want to offer. And now we'll be able to actually take on the onslaught of orders that we will be receiving with ease and efficiency.
That's great. I'm glad we're recording this. I think there might have been an ad in there somewhere. Really good. And perfect timing, because Keep It Simple sales have been through the roof since Sherry put out the new book. So
yes,
really, really perfect all the way around. So job well done, everyone. Congratulations.
Yeah. Thank you all. Yeah.
All right. Thanks to both of you. It was a pleasure having you on the show.
Great.
Thanks, Jen.
All right. We'll turn it over to you, Michael.
Thanks, Jen. Good afternoon, and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Good afternoon, Sherry.
Good afternoon, Michael.
I can't tell you how excited I am to sit on the sidelines and listen to that.
I know. Well, I don't know about the sitting on the sidelines part, but it was very, very fun to hear, wasn't it?
It was very fun to hear.
And I'm sure you have some sense of the nightmare that Keep It Simple has been in for many, many years. I certainly know what they've struggled and suffered through. So this truly is momentous for us, and happy and pleased for all of them, and as they indicated, for everybody who's going to try to interact with us in the future.
Yes, yes. And fun for me to hear a voice other than my own during Good News Update.
I know. It's always a pleasure to hear some other voice than our own, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah, very good.
Yes. Wonderful.
Yes.
Barry, you've been traveling a little bit. You were in San Diego, is that right?
I was. I was in San Diego over the weekend. It was a glorious time. Now, I understand the weather was beautiful everywhere on Saturday. I'll tell you, San Diego just went above and beyond.
Uh-huh.
And, it was a great event. In fact, we had such a good time that we've decided to make it an annual event.
Oh, wow.
Hmm?
Great.
Yeah.
Great. And I think that's where I first made your acquaintance with it.
Well, I talked to some folks down there who reminded me of that. That in fact, I think they indicated it was the first public workshop that I'd ever done down there. So that's a long time ago.
Yes, yes. Mm-hmm. Great. Thank you for sharing practice.
Oh, well, always my pleasure.
And you'll be continuing to share practice this weekend. This Saturday at Center for Spiritual Enlightenment in San Jose.
Yes. Another fabulous place.
Another fabulous. Lots of fabulous places coming up,
mm-hmm.
including East West Bookstore in Mountain View.
Favorites.
Yes.
I think one of the first bookstore events I ever did was at East West in Mountain View, so it's kind of like going home.
Yeah, great. I have a lot of fond memories of laughing at East West. And then you'll be at East West in Seattle on December 9th and coming back to the relatively new Mountain View Zen Center.
Yes. What are we doing there?
Real Comfort on December 11th.
real comfort.
Excellent. During the holiday season.
Uh-huh. How to take care of yourself in difficult times or some such thing, I bet, huh?
Yes, yes. Particularly for me, I know there's a lot of conditioning around the holidays and
oof,
how that's supposed to look and how I'm supposed to feel and all that.
How you're supposed to eat a bunch of stuff that is not good for you and spend a lot of money that you don't have. Often your time with people you don't really enjoy and make it a high point of your life.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Yeah, not a recipe for success, is it? And then the New Year's retreat on December 27th through January 1st.
Yes. A rockin' good time.
Yes, yes. And before we take our calls, I just wanted to thank you for the assignment today for the email class, which I jumped on and thoroughly enjoyed.
Good, wasn't it?
It was good. Great.
It was fun for me over the weekend because there were a number of people in the workshop who are in the email class.
Yes.
And so it was kind of a, okay, you know, how do we do this work in person? Knowing what's coming up in the class, you know, not to spoil any surprises, but you know, so it was fun. It was fun to be with people who are doing the email class and following along in that way.
Great.
Good work.
Great. And I want to remind our callers to focus on one topic, please. Ready for our callers?
Yes.
First caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hello.
Hello.
Hi, this is Andrea.
Hey, Andrea.
Philadelphia. Hi.
How you doing?
Oh, well, my good is what my first instinctive thing was to say.
Uh-huh.
So I guess that's good.
Yes, yes.
It's interesting because the story is not so good, but I'm glad to be on the phone, on the radio show.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
And what's going on is just checking in after 6 weeks.
Very good.
Yeah, and just trying to keep my commitment and concentrate when I have a four-year-old who's making a lot of noise right now. That's what's going on. But,
well, now, that is the advantage of doing the work, of being able to focus one's attention, isn't it?
Yes. Oh, yes. Focusing attention is just a really big thing, and I'm doing the email class and reading your book. So.
Oh, good.
The new book, yeah.
Good. Good. Well, I'm hoping by the time this is over, I will have pounded people over the head so much that, you know, the kind of knee-jerk response will be, ooh, I'm not in well-being. Where's that recorder?
Yeah. Well, it's funny.
I need to talk to and listen to my mentor.
Yeah, well, it's so funny because I was really resistant to doing the reassurances for years and years, and now I actually look forward to listening to my reassurances.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm hoping is going to be the outcome of this work, because for a little while, so you know, if you do, there's nothing wrong with you, and you get some of that, you know, so you get some clues about that,
yeah.
And then you go away, and people just have no idea the grip that egocentricity has on them. Karmic conditioning. People just don't know. It's an amazement how convinced people are that egocentric karmic conditioning, self-hate, is them. That they are it. It is them. That when the voice says you are such a piece of whatever, they think that it's them talking to them. And of course, when it's more subtle things like I don't want to do that, or I don't feel like it, or that's too hard, or whatever, there's just no ability. No awareness present to question, is that true? Why am I? So, you know, I've just been pounding people with this for years, but going from a retreat like that out into the world, there's just there are no reminders that you have a tool at your disposal that will actually change your life forever. So now, what, 15, 20 years or whatever it is after that work, here's this work that's completely focused on self-mentoring and realizing that we have direct access all the time to the wisdom, love, and compassion that is our authentic nature, that we can access it with the turn of our attention. Of course, the resistance is there. That's what today's class was, as you know. The resistance is there. That's always worked really well for egocentric karmic conditioning.
Oh,
I don't want
man.
To. I don't feel like it. It's too hard.
And that totally hits home tonight because I came home with a wicked headache. The train was really late. I was really angry about that. And yet I still managed to call in.
Yes, yes. Well, and with this kind of focus, you know, my hope is, so almost everybody that I've ever talked to who had a clue about this in the past said, oh, yeah, I did that for a little while, and then I didn't. So the resistance to doing this work is there because, of course, karmic conditioning knows that it's, you know, it's curtains for it. If the person really gets the possibility in this work, and that's what I'm hearing from people, so I'm pretty darn excited about it.
It's funny because even before the class started, you know, I've had this kind of picture of how a mentor is supposed to look. I was doing the exercises, and typically I have this mentor who comes in, and I feel like there's a five-year-old child who needs to be mentored, and the mentor is kind of this person who's very loving, like a mother, and kind of you know, sit on my lap, and I love you very much, and it's okay, and, you know, kind of very, very reassuring. And so I noticed that I kind of have this notion of that, of who the mentor is, and there's kind of like the second guesser who comes in and says, that's how the mentor looks. But what I've been noticing is that just spontaneously I'll be, you know, focused on something negative, quote, negative, and a voice will come in and say, focus your attention.
Aha. Aha. Oh, isn't that beautiful?
Yeah. Yeah. And it's just interesting because, you know, in some of the exercises, for me, I've just found just kind of having that reassuring mentor is great. And I'm not really sure where to go, like if I really need to go anywhere else in the recording or... You
well,
know, that's what I'm not sure about.
Okay, so here's my encouragement. Make the mentor, put the mentor in the role of extremely wise counselor, say spiritual teacher, you know, that kind of figure that you would go to talk over anything that's going on with you. So not just the loving kind of mother, grandmother type that, you know, you ran into to take care of a five-year-old, because there's taking care of the year-old that you are now.
Yeah.
And so somebody gets very upset when the train is late. And
yeah.
So you might want to look at, this is what's going on. These are the voices that I'm hearing. What do I turn my attention to drop that? What do I do with the sensations in my body? And you talk through it, you get to a point of clarity about it, you realize what you need to put your attention on when those sensations start to arise and kick that conversation, that karmic conversation off. You know, you in the same way, you need to turn your attention. You know, the mentor's voice is going to come in and say, oh, there are those sensations. So, you know, what you want to turn your attention to is.
Yeah, that's amazing. That's so great that you brought that up, because I didn't even see that till you brought it up. But I was totally identified on the train, and there was no mentor. And I think what I'm seeing is that I've dealt with such horrible self-hate that I've really suffered enough with that, with the self-hate directed towards me.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't seem to have suffered as much with the self-hate projected outward, like the self-righteousness and the anger.
Yes, yes. And that is such an important point that I'm hoping a lot of people will listen to, because it is taking as great a toll on you when it works you up like that. You know, it's going after the same meal. You're worked up over what a rotten, horrible, loser person you are, and then you're worked up over what horrible, rotten, loser people they are.
Yeah.
The process is exactly the same. It's taking the same toll on your system, and it's providing the same life force for karmic conditioning self-hate. So that's just a critical awareness to have. The reason it's hard, of course, for people to catch on to is it feels so much better.
It does. It really does. But, you know, it's funny because I kind of, the self-hate projected outward, I always called the rebel sub-personality, and I really felt that was who I was for so many years.
Mm-hmm.
And now, you know, just even disidentifying, you know, 40 minutes ago I was identified with that. Even just 40 minutes later, I can see, God, I don't want to be that person.
Yes. Yeah. And that it's probably, you know, there may be a legitimate sub-personality, you know, a teenager who stood up and said, I'm not going to take this anymore. But that's the kind of thing that karmic conditioning can grab hold of and really use against you.
You know what, now that you say that, I remember at a retreat in April you mentioned that. And, yeah, I'm so glad you mentioned it again because, that's true.
So you can do work with a teenager, a snarly teenager, who needs to have access to you to stick up for her in situations or, you know, help her through. There are a lot of people out there who don't always come from the most compassionate place. And, yep, we can all be knotheads. That's really true. And there's no reason for you to pay the price for that. So, you know, all that we need to be concerned about is being the best person we can be. Let them do what they do and take care of themselves. You know, we all have our karma. Let's make ours as squeaky clean as possible.
Well, one question I have is you brought up the possibility of saying, you know, basically egocentric karmic conditioning is saying, you know, these things about me and these are lies. And I haven't really done that in the past because there's been this fear of being identified if I state what ego says.
Yeah, but you won't. In fact, I just, before the radio show, was responding to someone in the email class who said, you know, I did that last, I guess it was class two. I did class two, and I wish I hadn't because now I'm depressed. And I simply said, well, then you didn't do the exercise. So if you're really doing the exercise, you are bringing these, you know, there's that, going back to a traumatic event and helping out the person. If you go back there from a disidentified place, there's no way you're going to come out depressed. If you let karmic conditioning take you back there and get you identified with voices of self-hate that were beating you up then, yeah, it's going to be depressing, but that's not the exercise. So in the same way, the exercise of saying, you know, the voices say that I'm a failure. That's a lie. I'm actually quite a successful person, and the fact that I'm having this conversation with a recorder is the proof of that. Let's see. Let's go over the other successes. I do this and this and this. I've done this and this and this. I've worked on this. I've gotten through this, I've gotten past that, you know. So the voice tells me this, and I follow that. My response to that, you know, it's maybe 8 words, and my response is 15 minutes.
I see, wow.
Yeah. So by the time I get through with that response, that you know, there's just no hope of karmic conditioning getting me to identify with that voice of self-hate.
Yeah, well, I'll have to do it then.
Oh, yes. Yeah, do it with every one of them. And, you know, you can do it very randomly. Each time you hear one and recognize it for what it is, you know, just stop right there, talk it into the recording, and then talk, you know, acknowledge it or point it out as a lie and say whatever is true about that.
Yeah, maybe the thing to do is actually to do it in the moment, bring the recorder everywhere and just assume
I catch something,
you know.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, and then let the mentoring take you wherever. You know, you might want to sing a little success song, whatever it is that the issue is. You know, you make up a little tune, you decide, you know, you plan the party you're going to have for all of the successes. Just take it out there until it's really fun and pleasant for you, and self-hate really wishes it had never brought it up.
What's really comes up for me when you talk about that is a certain fear I've just noticed, and I'm really afraid to call people. And, like, certain people who I know really, really well, it's not hard, but people who I'm kind of don't know that well, I find it really difficult to call them, and there's this fear, this huge fear, and this fear of awkwardness and a silence. So I guess I'd really like to try to mentor myself with that.
That's perfect. And, you know, that kind of thing, you could do a track so that you talk about the fears that you have how you would like it to be, what you know is possible for you. You could talk about what the voices say and then what you need to hear instead. You know, it could even be the case that it's a young person in you who needs to have some help and coaching on how to be in that kind of situation.
Yeah,
so
it
could be a whole workshop, get to the other side of it.
You know, what I have been doing is self-facilitation, but I haven't been scheduling it regularly. But what you're saying sounds actually even more powerful than self-facilitation.
Yes. Well, and you could record the self-facilitation.
Yeah, yeah.
And,
well, I'm recording this conversation now. So.
Oh, very good. And in the spirit of how you do anything is how you do everything, one of the things we see is that when we mentor ourselves through a process like that, the content that we can apply that to is vast. See what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
It makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I just really need to get into doing it.
Hop on it. It's fun. Something to do on the train. Something to do while you're waiting for the train.
You know, I had this vision of actually calling the radio show on the train if it was so late that I didn't get home.
Mm-hmm.
I actually thought about it. I thought, why not? You know,
yeah,
I mean,
why not? And why not do all of this mentoring work? It's perfect. How long is your train ride?
Well, the train ride is only 14 minutes. So actually what I do is my commute's a lot of walking. So walking is about 40 minutes, and a train ride is only 14 minutes. So when I walk, what I do when I walk is I listen to the radio show.
Oh, yeah. And as you do more of the recording work, you can listen to the recordings.
Yeah.
And then when something comes up on the radio show that strikes you, you can work on that, put it on the recording. Everything is an opportunity for self-mentoring. All right.
All right, thank you, Sherry.
Thank you for keeping your commitment.
Yeah.
I'll talk to you in when?
6 weeks.
In
I'll
six
have
weeks.
To look on the calendar and see
Very
when
good.
That is.
Very
yeah.
good. Take
yeah.
good
thank
care.
Thank you, Michael.
You're welcome.
Okay.
Good night.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us, Andrea. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, we're going to hear from Sangha Market, and then we'll be right back.
All right.
What's this from Living Compassion?
If you've got a craving for fundraising and can't get enough of the good stuff, cruise and jet on the internet to www.sanghamarket.
That's sanghamarket.com for all of you squares out there.
Sangha Market, where you can sell, auction, buy, all to benefit Living Compassion. Check it out today.
If you suddenly find yourself believing the voices in your head, don't panic. Just remember these three easy steps. Stop, drop, and breathe. That sequence again is stop, drop, and breathe. This public service announcement is brought to you by Voice Busters Incorporated, purveyors of the finest practice tools and reminders since 2008. Visit us on the World Wide Web at thevoicescartoons.org.
Stop, drop, and breathe. Stop, drop, and breathe.
Welcome back to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, we have another caller here.
All right.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Sherry. Hi, Michael. It's Jodine from California.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. So I am also calling in because I committed to calling regularly. However, I've been unable to get on the air for a number of weeks. So
you kept your commitment. We, however, were interfering with it.
Well, I don't know if you want to cast it in those terms, but let's just say, you know, I mean, the show's just gotten very popular. So, but I have to say that every time that I make the time to call, and I'm listening to the show live and thinking I might get on.
Uh-huh.
It's really a great practice opportunity.
Because
basically because I'm really trying to listen to, you know, who is on right now as I'm on hold.
Uh-huh.
But at the same time, it's like, oh, I might get on next, you know, so I can watch my attention going back and forth to, like, being present to what, you know, is happening on the show versus what's going on in me.
Yes.
And, you know, so
yeah.
I'm sure everyone has this kind of experience.
Well,
or something like it.
So it is, as you said, it's a great practice opportunity to stay here with everything that's going on.
Yeah.
Good. And
yeah.
Actually, you know, this commitment thing is just a ploy on our part to get people to listen to the show.
No.
you try to get on when it's your month or your 6 weeks or whatever it is, and then you can't, so you have to be on the next week, and then you don't get on then, so you have to the next week. So we keep you
trapped
here for the rest of your life.
You know, Sherry, I think, well, besides for that, I think it also helped me focus on my process, because the times when I wanted to call, when I was trying to call and didn't get on, there, you know, every time I've had something, you know, that was up for me then that I hoped to get guidance on. But as the weeks, you know, went by and I didn't get on, and I think about, like, oh, well, what am I going to talk about on the radio show? It's been more like I see my process.
Uh-huh.
And the content kind of week by week kind of falls away.
That's very helpful.
Yeah. So let me see if I can kind of tell you what's going on. But I have a quick question before then. So I am not able to understand everything that the people singing the song about Sangha Market are saying.
Uh-huh.
And it's like every time I hear it, I'm like, what? What? So maybe you can help me out. So they say, if you've got a craving for fundraising and can't get enough of the good stuff, cruise what?
Cruise
on the internet?
Down. Yeah.
Cruise on down?
Yeah, you know, when you say it like that, cruise or jet on the
cruise
internet.
Or,
I think
cruise
is what
or
it says.
Jet.
Yeah, on the internet to www.sanghamarket.com. That's S-A-N-G-H-A.
Okay. I thought it said cruise engine. or it sounds like cruise engine. And then I thought, what is that? Cruise engine? Okay, cruise or jet on the internet.
I think that's
oh,
what
I see it. Oh, it rhymes.
Yes. I think maybe we should get Alex to write the words on the website or something. So for all of those people who are wondering, what?
Okay.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Maybe it's just me.
Can I add a comment?
Yes, please.
It's much clearer in the archives because you get the high quality version of the audio in the archive.
Ah, okay, Jodine. So start listening to the archives.
Okay, thanks. That's a tangent. So the update on kind of where I'm at in practice right now is that I've had kind of a year or more that feels like a lot of breakthrough in my practice, and with respect to the new book, a lot of this breakthrough has been really feeling this deep connection to a mentoring presence that's always with me.
Uh-huh.
And I first kind of got in touch with that through the non-dominant hand, dominant hand dialogue, you know, writing.
Yes.
And I would just, you know, the things that my mentor would say to me would really just floor me. I mean, touch my heart, just amazing. and as I'm kind of looking back over the years, I'm realizing that this person has always been with me.
Yes. Oh, may I interrupt you for just a second?
Yes.
Because, again, in answering, you know, responding to people as they write into the class, that's I was just writing about that. That what people mm-hmm. are starting to say is an indication that mentoring voice has always been there with them, but the voices of self-hate have just drowned it out.
Yes.
So it's
not beating you over the head.
Yeah, exactly. So the process of that mentoring is very familiar to people. It's more of a recognition of something, you know, as you say, that's always been going on than something new that's being added.
Yes. Yes, but it's more, I guess, the breakthrough or one of the breakthroughs this year has been somehow bringing that into consciousness, you know, being able to really hear that voice or feel that presence.
Yes.
In a much more like tangible way.
Yes.
Than before.
Yeah. So kind of moving from there's this vague, nebulous kind of sense over there once in a while, and this dominant experience of egocentric karmic conditioning. So kind of a soft little mentoring, and then just hammered over the head with egocentric karmic conditioning. And then over time, as we practice, they come more into balance so that mentoring voice is more familiar. We spend more time at center. We feel like we have a greater access to compassion and wisdom and that sort of thing. And then it tips.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, and some of the things that my mentor has actually said to me is I've always been right here.
Yes.
You know, I've always been with you.
Yeah. It's like, darn, I wish I'd known that.
Yeah, because it's like, you know, it's very true to my experience that the, you know, the self-hate was so dominant for so many years that, you know, it was just this one little kind of peak experience. Seriously, looking back at my life before practice, the peak experiences that I would point to, you know, kind of drawing me onto the spiritual path would be those times when I felt conscious contact with my mentor.
Yeah.
And they were few and far between.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes. And the point to me is so important about that they were always there. You didn't know how to be present to them. So periodically there was a little gap for whatever reason in the assault of karmic conditioning, and that light shone through.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, well, I have to say that I am so grateful for practice because as these breakthroughs happen, so the last time I called in, Melinda was on the show, and I was saying that I was in a bit of a tight spot, because coming on the heels of kind of a spring and summer of having breakthroughs and going on retreat at the monastery, I got back from retreat and basically it seemed like ego went on the war path, like just like pulled out all the stops,
yeah.
Right?
Yep.
And at the same time, there's been I've had this like wondering sense. So that's going on kind of in my practice, and then what's happening in my life is I have been dealing with a series of physical ailments, some of which have kind of come out of nowhere, like new things, and then other things that were like a flare-up, say, of this old back injury that I deal with periodically. And I almost got this sense, or I stood back from this recently, and I was like, could it be that ego has kind of got it, that it can't control my mind anymore? Like, I'm actually able to direct my attention away from self-hating voices, from all the things that are not what I want for my life, and make choices that are in alignment with my heart. And it's kind of like given up on my mind, and now it's attacking my body.
Yes, yeah. I think you're onto something.
It almost seems like that.
Oh,
and it's
I think it's absolutely like that.
You think it's actually true? And you know
yes,
what? I've had this sense. As soon as that insight kind of dropped in, I just got this like, oh, ho, ho, conditioning. You're busted. You know, like, I'm on to you if that's what you're doing. Like, go ahead, because I've had, in the past, I've overcome very, very challenging physical, you know, physical, psycho-spiritual, mental problems, you know, that I was hospitalized for instance, that I was disabled for long periods of time with. And actually, I was in the hospital last week and have been off work with a pretty serious medical problem. And the difference now is I really feel like my mentor has been there with me through the entire experience. There's still things that my doctors don't understand, that they don't know what's going to happen. They don't know how to treat me, and it's all okay.
Yes.
Like, it's all happening I don't see it, I see it really as practice now.
Yes, because the thing, you know, what karmic conditioning does to people is make certain things okay and certain things not okay, and it's just understood that that's true. But really what you're describing to me is right on target, because whether it's mental, emotional, spiritual, or physical, our job is the same, and that is to come to center and embrace that suffering, that which suffers into unconditional love and acceptance.
Yes.
And it, the rules aren't different if it's physical and something that could be potentially terminal. The rules don't change because of that. But what karmic conditioning has people convinced of is if it's physical health, if it's kids, if it's money, if it's career, then what you have to do is turn it over to conditioned mind, because center is going to make those very bad accepting choices.
Yes.
Yeah. So.
Right, right. Oh, so, yes, and actually class number two in the, and if you go on that checklist that you just went down, you know, all these really real things, my, you know, my life story, I can go through like, okay, that really real thing, well, maybe it's not so real. Okay, that, you know, bring it into practice, bring it into practice.
Yeah.
And the thing that I chose for class two, to look at something very traumatic, was an experience I had where I learned that the career, that career thing that, you know, ego wants to say is so real, was absolutely 180 degrees opposite. For, you know, I made this choice from my heart about my career that ego said was going to be the end of, you know,
why
the end of my professional life. You know, and actually, yes, I might also die. which marks the beginning, I think, of this awakening for me that has just brought more and more joy, peace, all those things that I longed for when I was living in the nightmare of self-hate and ego all the time. And they're there in my life. And, you know, all I can say is thank you, practice.
Yeah, yeah. All right. Well, it is good to hear. I'll tell you, I like these. I like these not happy endings, but happy continuings.
Yes, yes. And I just love. I love the email class and the new book. So thank you very, very much.
Oh, you are so welcome. My pleasure. So
good night.
We'll talk to you in a month or whenever it works.
Yes.
Whenever
yes.
you can get on. Okay.
Yes.
All right. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks, Sherry. Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us, Jordan. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, we're going to hear from our sponsors, and then we'll be right back.
All right.
What would you do if you knew you could not fail? How free would you be? How deep would you love, dear? What would you hear if you listened to your beautiful heart?
This music by Trish Bruxford Colligan gives voice to what Simply Celebrate is all about. Opening to rivers of joy, listening to our hearts, trusting ourselves and our lives. Simply Celebrate is a book and business that grew out of gratitude for the work of Sherry Huber and this amazing Sangha. We use the practice as a foundation for helping people wake up to all the joy, spontaneity, color, and connection that is available in every moment. Please visit simplycelebrate.net.
What if you bathed in an ocean of roses? What if you swam in a river of...
Porchdog Software is proud to support Open Air with Sherry Huber. For more years than we care to mention, Porchdog has been writing Windows and Mac software for customers big and small. We're pretty good at what we do, and we always try to remember that what we're doing is never more important than how we're doing it. Check us out at www.porchdogsoft.com. We look forward to hearing from you soon.
welcome back to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, we have another caller.
Excellent.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Yes, this is Nancy from Texas.
Hey, Nancy.
Hi, Sherry. Hi, Michael.
Hi.
How's it going?
Oh, it's going so well. Practice is just paying off so hand over fist these days, and I'm just calling in gratitude, really.
Well, that's very good news.
Yes, it's been wonderful. I really got slammed with all kinds of stuff yesterday around the holidays and, whenever I mow the lawn, it seems like I have hours that I can just spend with this, I realized yesterday, with this voice in my head airing its grievances
about
everyone it's ever met. And I'd for a long time I thought those were my grievances. And then I thought I had to just listen to them. And now I realize they're not my grievances and I don't have to listen to them.
And in fact, now you have something that you would actually like to listen to, right?
Well, I've taken to just doing meta. Every time that voice comes up with something against someone, I just do a four-line meta toward that person, you know, which really, really makes the voice...
crazy.
Yes, it does. It just ties it up in knots. You can just see it sort of spluttering away because I've taken whoever it most thinks I should identify with disliking and sent them love and well-being and health and happiness. It's lovely.
Mm-hmm. And, of course, you can add that same kind of attitude of mind to everything in your day, everything around you, and just have your attention on it all the time.
Yes, or just... It'll be so interesting. I'll be doing some kind of chore, something new, and doing it really well. And it'll throw up an example of some person I shouldn't like because they wouldn't be doing it well. And I just,
and when you're there, you just go, what?
I do. I'm really catching it fast these days. And I'm so, even if it's 12 hours, that's fast as
that's
far
fast.
As I'm concerned.
Yeah. That's
and I'm just
funny,
so
though,
great. I finally see it.
Yeah.
So anyway, it's all good news as far as I can see right now.
Love it. Love it.
Yep,
thanks.
Me too. Thank you so much.
Thanks for sharing the good news.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us, Nancy. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, we have another caller.
Hi.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Lisa from Seattle.
Hey, Lisa.
Hi. Well, I'm so glad to get through.
Yeah.
I've been wanting to call for 2 months now.
Oh, okay.
And
welcome.
Yeah. Yeah, conditioning has been trying all sorts of things like amnesia. I actually during the day forget about the call.
Uh-huh.
And then I remember somewhere around, 5:55.
Right.
My time, specific
yeah.
time. It's like, oh,
yeah.
rats.
Yeah.
Or I'll call the wrong number or I'll, accidentally hang up. Or
yeah.
Yeah, it's been a series.
I love that one, that first one that you describe where there's nothing, no awareness of anything. And then at the exact moment, it's too late.
Yes.
Here comes the reminder. So what it says, of course, is that all of that is going on just absolutely precisely right under the level of conscious awareness, right?
Yes, and it feels very deliberate.
Ooh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah,
rotten.
Week after week after
mm-hmm.
week.
Mm-hmm.
So today I had all sorts of alarms that I set up this morning, and then they were all going off at different times to keep me, so that, and then I got a call from my husband and said, okay, this is your reminder call, and the timer on the stove went off. And
yeah, try to miss these,
huh? Oh. Anyway, so I was calling really with an update, a couple updates. And a while back, I had really been having some issues with anxiety.
Uh-huh.
And you advised me to, wherever I was, whatever was going on, you know, lay down and you know,
just
deep breathe.
Mm-hmm.
And just breathe. And so that I went through a whole process with that of, first of all, it didn't happen.
Oh.
For a while. And I kind of went, well, okay, I can't do the homework because it's not happening.
This is the same process, isn't it?
Uh-huh.
Exactly the same thing as, oops, you forgot the show.
Oops. Okay, so it's not happening now.
Yeah.
Ooh. And then, of course, it eventually did. And for a long time, I wouldn't, again, the amnesia, I wouldn't remember to do the homework in the midst of it because it was so, my attention was so on it.
Yes.
That it wasn't on breathing.
Yes, yes.
But eventually, I mean, I just kept trying. And then after each time would happen, I'd be like, okay, now next time I'm going to be aware. And eventually I was, and I was able to do it. And what I found being able to do it and just going right and going at it straight, you know, just like going right at it.
Yeah.
That somehow that was like accepting it. And I didn't try to make it stop.
Yes.
And I didn't try and pretend that it wasn't happening, and I didn't distract myself. I was there with it, and I just let it be, and I let it be okay.
Yes.
And
yes.
What I have found is that in the act of accepting it, it has diminished.
Yes.
In more ways than one, diminished in intensity during the time, you know, when it does happen. And then it has somewhat diminished in, you know, frequency.
Yes. Yes.
So I find that very interesting.
Yeah, because the only power it has is the power it gets from you resisting it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Otherwise, it's just, you know, wind is not a problem unless it comes up against something.
Yeah.
it's stronger than.
Right.
And so if, you know, it's the little piggies in the house of straw or whatever it was, you know, if so with nothing impeding its progress, it just blows along. You know, hurricanes wouldn't be a problem if people didn't build houses.
Right.
Yeah. So in that same way, you just let it blow through and there is no problem. It passes and that's the end of it. And then if we tie it together with the thing we were talking about earlier, where you really have a sense of the kind of deliberate setup. So it's happening. You get kind of unnerved by it. We have a conversation. You get a plan going, and then it doesn't happen until enough time has gone by that you forget.
Mm-hmm.
And then it happens. And so, of course, you're not looking for it, so you don't remember the homework. Right?
Yep.
And as soon as you do and you remember the homework and you start approaching it in that way, again, there's no resistance. There's nothing giving it any buildup. And so the power goes out of it. Now, of course, again, a lot of this conversation, you can know that there is another plot being hatched somewhere.
I had a feeling.
Yeah. So again, if we don't resist that,
right?
If we just know, yep, karmic conditioning is going to hatch plots. My job is to pay attention so that I see them, not resist them, you know, do the old judo or aikido with them, you know, just grab its little arm and help it on its way. There's no problem.
Exactly. So I'm learning that.
Yes.
I'm learning.
Yes, it's very good.
And I had one more update that I've called for years about my youngest child, who now is 8, and she's given me all sorts of fits and starts and behavior issues and, you know.
And spiritual.
And spiritual opportunities. And, you know, she's the self-starter in the family. And we've discovered lately that she has a sensitivity to dairy and soy.
Uh-huh.
And now as soon as we have taken her off of those, we have found that, you know, this behavior is really evened out and everything's fine, which it's just interesting how when I can see it, when I can see her behavior as it is that something that belongs to this, you know, this other thing is causing it, my whole orientation to the behavior changes.
Sure. Which is too bad, but we are conditioned to approach it that way.
Yeah.
Yeah. If something is justified, if we can understand it, then it's okay. We have no conditioning that says, well, it is, therefore it is okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And what a comfort to her and to the rest of the family to know that it's something that is avoidable.
Yes. And then when it does accidentally happen, because, you know, it happens,
mm-hmm.
Then I can point out to her, you know, this isn't you. conditioning
analogy.
On a different level. Mm-hmm. You know, this is the dairy and what it does to your body, and, you know, we'll get...
And body and mind are one.
Yeah, we will get through all this, and you'll be... And you're fine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And of course, this is probably actually a very good age for her to learn this, because she can realize that those sensations are there. She can realize what's causing the sensations and that the reactions that arise with that are not something she needs to go along with. She can learn that, right? So it's like, my favorite example, you know, I just drank 3 cups of strong coffee, and so now I want to yell at everybody. Well, if I don't know that I want to yell at everybody because I just drank 3 cups of strong coffee, then I'm kind of a victim to that whole thing. But if I know it, if I know, oh, that's just, my body just feels that way because of the coffee and because those sensations are there, it's triggering those thought patterns and my body is really irritable and I'm having this emotional reaction, but it's just because of the coffee. It doesn't mean I need to act that out.
Yes.
That's freedom.
Yes, yes, and I've seen that in her already.
Mm-hmm.
Because she was, before this, she had been starting down the road of, I'm bad.
Oh, yeah.
I'm just bad.
Sure.
So
get a lot of reinforcement for that. The world doesn't like children who don't behave.
No.
As good children should behave.
Right. If they're not quiet and doing what they're supposed to do. And, you know, and that's, it's a challenge for mom.
Oh,
when,
absolutely.
You know. You're bouncing off the walls.
Well, you have the same conditioning as everybody else.
Yeah.
Right? So it's just the way we were conditioned, our self-hatred gets triggered in us, and then we direct it at her, and that's how it gets passed along. So for her to have it, I mean, you know, it'll be years before she can feel deep gratitude for this, but someday she will, based on the parents she has. If she can get, just because I'm feeling that doesn't mean I need to think that or do that. I mean, the application for that is vast. It will free her in ways that it'll take other people lifetimes to catch on to if they ever do.
I sure hope so.
You know
I
what
hope
I mean?
That is in her future.
Yeah. You know what I mean by that?
Yes.
Yeah. That
yes.
To get that and be able to apply it at that age is extraordinary. I mean, we all could have, all children could be taught in this way, but because, first of all, the parents don't have the insight to do it, and there usually isn't something extreme enough to drive people to assisting a child in seeing through a process like that. You know,
yeah.
I mean, you know, I don't mean any criticism in this at all. You know that, I hope. But,
oh, yeah.
You know, it drove the family to this level of awareness about it and dealing with it. If she were any less reactive, you know, everybody would probably just say, oh, well, it's a stage. She'll outgrow it, we hope. And
right, which is where we were.
Yeah, when she does.
But it never did, and so we really, we had to search and search and search until we figured something out.
Isn't it great?
You know, and I don't think we're done.
Oh, no.
But we're,
And if we approach everything in life in that way, I am required to find freedom in this situation, in every moment of life. This moment of life is requiring me, encouraging me, directing me toward freedom and well-being, toward acceptance and compassion.
Mm-hmm.
What a gift.
Yes. Yeah, I think this whole thing with her husband, when I look at it from this angle, I can see that it's a gift.
Oh, yeah, because everybody's learning it.
Yeah.
Just because I feel that doesn't mean I need to react in a karmically conditioned way. Very good.
Yes.
Well,
so, thank you. Thank you. It was a pleasure to get on tonight and
talk with you. And we'll talk again before long.
We will.
All right.
Okay, good night, Sherry.
Good night, Michael.
Hi, Lisa. Thanks for joining us, Lisa. You've been listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. One of many gifts I've received today.
Yeah. I love Sangha. I love practice.
Me too. It helps me to take it much less personally.
Yes, yes, absolutely. Yeah, we're all in this together, as we like to point out. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Sherry.
All right. Good night. Talk to you next week.
Okay. Good
night.
Bye-bye.